So, as much as I think everyone enjoys the very depressing music that you've decided to start the last two seasons, we go back to something better. Didn't Shane used to pick it? Shane, pick better music.
Okay.
Bow down when I come to your town. Bow down when I'm west with bands. Bow down. Cause I ain't a hater like you. Bow down to a killer that's
the following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Shane Settner.
Yo.
Sean Riley.
Hello.
Bobby Schmidt.
Hey.
Ashley Keller.
Hey.
And superfan Megan Norfleet.
Hello.
We wouldn't be bringing this cornucopia of MMC voices to your delighted ears this evening if it weren't for a return to Game of Thrones. We're back. Our most listened to episodes are about Game of Thrones. I choose to believe it's the Mediocre Methodist cast where we talk about, like, in-depth religious-themed movies. But I could be wrong about that. I don't actually see the numbers. But it is the final season of Game of Thrones time, and we're going to get together again to talk about it for all of our clever japes and our trenchant analysis and so on and so forth and our power rankings and our fantasy nonsense, which is another term for Game of Thrones. But, you know, it's good to be back, everybody.
Yeah.
Talk about Game of Thrones again.
Good to be back, and the only thing more sick than me right now is this new microphone, John. You're so fancy.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Everyone listen as I gently shift my weight on this stool I'm sitting on. There it goes. Okay, delightful.
What I really like about it is it'll pick up, if I actually do need to go puke, it'll pick up my stomach rumbling probably before I hear it. So
as long as we hit the mute button before the vomit hits the floor, I think everyone will appreciate such quick reflexes. So first question, who won the week? HBO is you know, they've always got good Sundays, but this is a particularly good Sunday between Game of Thrones and Veep and Barry and Last Week Tonight. Has anybody seen all of them?
No.
I haven't watched Veep yet. That was going to be after this.
Okay. I have seen all of them. I'm going to give it to Barry, just because that's just in my wheelhouse. It's not. It's funny Breaking Bad.
I with the amount of presence out there for this weekend, I don't think anyone else could have possibly won this week other than Game of Thrones, even if these other two episodes.
Oh, well, I mean, we're not talking about, like, ratings-wise.
No, I mean, not just the mere presence of this whole thing. There are people out there who never followed it before 2 years ago, and everyone's got caught up, and it just feels insane how many people are watching. And if you watch, then you're on Twitter complaining about all the people who do
that
watch.
That is tiresome.
I was going to say, that's the hip thing to do, is like, hey, who else doesn't watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, in response to that, I got on Twitter today and was like, who cares about Notre Dame Cathedral? Get out of here with that.
Oh, I would love to join in on that, but I only use Twitter to insult Kings of Leon, so I got to keep that timeline pure. But
everyone's got their niche.
I'm also going to say I think Veep is back this season.
I mean, yeah, that's respectable. I wouldn't argue with that. It was real close with Veep and Barry for me, and John Oliver did a really good OxyContin episode. Kind of hurt a little bit to hear all that slander. But he's not wrong. And, you know, no one's necessarily saying Game of Thrones, the people that have seen other entries into the HBO Sunday Night Block, but, you know, we're going to talk about that. We're gonna decide whether or not we like this episode, what we're looking forward to, so on and so forth. And we're going to stick with our usual format of just jumping from location to location, even though the world has very much constricted in this last season. There's only three places to jump to. And we're just going to go event by event for the most part and interject as we see fit. The first thing that jumps out about the time that we spend in Winterfell is how much that they are calling back to the pilot. This is something that old Benny and Weiss and the actors have variously said in interviews that they're going to be calling back to the first season a lot. And this is very much true in this opening procession where Dany's army of Unsullied and dragons and Dothraki are entering Winterfell. The music is exactly the same as when Robert Baratheon and his entourage entered Winterfell. Like the way the scene is set up is essentially the same. There's a similar audience surrogate of a kid like climbing around to get a good view of the army as it's entering. It's not Bran this time. He's doing other stuff. We'll talk about it. But it's just some random kid sneaking peeks. The series started with the Baratheons coming into Winterfell, and now, you know, 70 episodes or so later, it returns with their archenemies doing the same. Did I miss any Any hot callbacks?
Well, the budget for extras was considerably higher this time.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
I mean, and Winterfell's has gotten a nice update.
What do we think about the CGI of old Winterfell there? Fine.
They did a pretty good job of rebuilding after
more intense.
That is too. Very true. Yes.
Yeah, they're very quick up there in the north. Great building skills. Smooth rock now, so.
I mean, were they quick, or did 7 years pass by and we just don't know it?
I think I choose to think that they traipsed over to the Iron Islands and took the engineer that made all those boats.
That's fair.
We were talking about the landscape of Winterfell.
Oh, yeah.
Like in the other establishing shots that they've done of the castle in the past, you know, hundreds or not hundreds, but like tens of millions of dollars ago. I kind of liked like the way that the hills of the surrounding landscape were set up. Maybe it's just snowy. Maybe it was just like the overhead shot. It kind of looked like you were in like a build your own strategy game. And you just planted this developed castle in the middle of a landscape that you haven't filled out yet.
I like those games.
Yeah, I mean, they got their
moments.
Isn't
that what
they
did for the most part back then? I mean, you plot your land and you build your fortified castles and walls and whatnot, and you branch out as you can.
It just looked very dead.
Why give it such a facelift? Why give it such a facelift right at the end, though? Is it because of the Battle of Winterfell? They're trying to like establish a much bigger.
Yeah, I guess like a resurgence of the North and Winterfell, maybe like.
Yeah.
It's rebuilt and better.
Well, they finally got a lady in the seat, just making sure everything's gonna look nice for once.
The landscaping's good. The
when Rob was around, underwear was just all over the place.
As much as the Northerners are admiring their fancy new digs, they're not so jazzed about the new people they're going to be sharing said digs with.
They're not even so jazzed about jazz because I think they're pretty racist too.
Were they? Yeah. I think they're just isolated. I don't know. Like if you brought. Like,
I don't know. I think the camera really lingered on Grey Worm and Miss Sandy.
That is
like,
absolutely
the
true.
The special dirty looks that they were getting. Like, how come these black people are coming into Winterfell?
Yes.
That's silly.
What you don't see under all that gray clothing are the red MAGA hats that everybody in Winterfell's just been waiting to pull out.
I guess they'd be MAGA.
Hey, they're better. They're better than gray hats.
Moog, make Winterfell great again?
They're better than the Frey hats.
Oh, very nice.
They don't pop as much.
What you really need is the combination of the two. A red Frey hat that says,
oh.
MAGA.
Oh, no.
Bobby's not into it.
Well, Bobby's out in Arizona, so he's got to deal with enough of that.
Yeah, I saw a black MAGA hat yesterday, all right? I'm done for a while.
Oh.
You're changing the colors up now.
Are you more excited about the changing neo-fascist fashion than are you more excited about that, Bobby, than Bran is about getting a forehead kiss from Jon? He seemed pretty wan about the whole thing.
Bran, I feel like everything he said should be considered wit now. With the same just perfect monotone. It's beautiful.
Is that because he's so off the off the spectrum now? Like, so you're like, good job, you're talking.
Yeah, the bar has been lowered a lot. Every time he's not saying a depressing, this is how you're going to die, Christopher Walken in the dead zone type of spoiler for a person's life. It's progress.
You think it's written like that because he's a bad actor? Or do you think it's like in the book, like maybe he's the exact opposite at this point if he's... George R. R. Martin's actually written this far.
We'll never know. A.
Or he's like, and... Bran with emphatic ejaculation yelled.
Maybe that's not the word you meant to use.
Emphatic ejaculation? Ejaculated emphatically.
We're not going to linger on it.
Anyway.
Has anyone ever seen that kid do an interview outside of Game of Thrones? No, do we know what he...
Ejaculation doesn't have to be... An ejaculation with your penis, John.
No, that's correct.
Oh, that is correct.
I don't think so. I think you're thinking of a different word.
No. I am Webster's very confident about my ejaculations.
So, you know, like Italians are famous ejaculators with their various
and gesticulators. Yes,
gesticulators. I think that might be what you're.
Ejaculation is not only with your penis, it can be with your mouth as well,
Something said quickly and suddenly.
Thank you.
But thank it you. Says that it says that definition is dated.
I agree with whatever internet dictionary Riley just looked at.
Well, the MMC is bringing it back. Just ejaculating in your ears.
Oh, God. Too hot.
I think you have your new theme song, Megan, or a new opener. MMC ejaculating into your ears.
I have a fever. I'm sorry.
The only solution the only prescription is more is ear ejaculation.
Ear ejaculation.
To loop back to a better past 5 minutes ago, Isaac Hampstead, right? We know he's a good actor because he used to be very expressive and very, at least, you know, for me, like he's behind a lot of very solid, if not great scenes in the first 3-4 seasons. So they're making him do this.
Yeah, I feel like it's planned, like it's written this way. It's creepy.
It's passing. So awful.
Yeah,
I don't find it creepy. I just find it like it's
not for the audience. I guess for other characters, seem a little creeped out by it.
I feel like they're passing the threshold where it's funny for the audience and creepy for the characters.
Yeah.
And if the characters were actually encountering this person like the audience is encountering him, they would also be laughing. But they're made to like look at him side-eyed because it is funny. Like I think it's organically funny that this kid in a wheelchair is just oddly staring at people as they exit rooms.
Relatable.
And he just happens to be there. Like, how does he get to these places? Is it just the principal actors and the principal characters in the story that he's doing to? Is he also freaking out the horse master? Is he also freaking out the blacksmiths? Is he just randomly showing up in doorways and freaking people out?
Is there like someone pushing him to these places? Or is his...
These are great questions. I would like to know. I want to know how Bran's getting from point A to point B.
Push me.
When you
over
said that,
there.
I pictured the guy from Saw that just like wheels and like his tires like slowly squeak as he shows up in places.
Bran coldly tells whoever's toting him around place to place,
"You want
to
play a game?
Oil. We're ruining the illusion of my creepy act here." We're also seeing various reunions, you know, like the arc of the show over the long term has been, you know, you start with a family intact, you spread them out over the world, and now you're bringing them all back. And this is as many people in one location as maybe there's ever been on the show. And so these characters pretty much all have history with each other. Arya plays a big part in a lot of these reunions. Arya and the Hound, Arya and Gendry, Arya and Jon comparing swords. And like, I thought this was like a pretty interesting reunion that Jon pretends that Arya is still the same person and tries to get her to go against Sansa, who is obviously against Jon and Dany's like nascent relationship, but Arya doesn't take the bite or doesn't take the bait. Any reunions jump out as ideal for you guys?
I like a Gendry Arya relationship. I think we're gonna get that this season.
Hot Pie is gonna be pissed.
I you know, my heart immediately went out to him in losing his not only partner in life but partner in business. But you know, we can't always get what we want. He doesn't
probably
have to
gonna
give
be
him
a big wedding
for his relationship.
It's gonna be great for his catering business.
Not that Hot Pie needs the help, but you know, he'll take what he can get.
That wolf bread speaks for itself.
100% it does. It's only getting better.
So this would be like, what would the wedding theme? What is he gonna bake for that?
Whose wedding are we talking about? Hot Pie and Gendry's?
Well, yes.
Because the theme of that wedding is true love.
That's right.
Yeah, but. You know, he's been scorned now by not only Arya, but also Gendry. So this is like double heartbreak for Hot Pie.
What if Bran gets married? Do we get wheelchair bake things? Or is that part of it?
I feel like he doesn't eat anymore.
What about his best man speech?
Like we don't see him. If we don't see him being wheeled from place to place, we certainly don't see him do anything to support.
He would excitedly say, "We don't have time for this shit."
Yeah, congrats to Hot Pie and Gendry. The Night King is coming.
You're gonna die in 10 years of an oven fire, and Gendry will shortly thereafter smack himself in the face with a hammer and kill himself because he can't live without his Hot Pie. We have one of our classic Winterfell conference room scenes. Danny very wisely, like I give old Benny and Weiss some credit on this scene, and that they understand the dynamics pretty well. Danny is correctly staying quiet until the very end when she gets a very subtle burn, so to speak, in on Sansa. And Sansa is also bringing up the very real concern of who's going to feed all these people. I have such sympathy for Sansa. Like, she was so proud of herself in the last season with all the provisions and the precautions that she took to prepare Winterfell for what was coming. And now just all of her plans are upended because there's like three times as many people there as there were when she was doing her planning. I have immense sympathy for her. She did all that work, and now it's all just going to go by that much faster. And like, this is such an important part of the show, well, like a previous part of the show, and a very important part of the books. These giant armies are a hugely difficult problem, requiring a lot of infrastructure and a lot of logistics, and moving them from place to place is a huge undertaking that is easily fucked with. And if it isn't taken care of, hungry dudes with swords will inevitably just start pillaging the land, no matter whose side they're on, the good guys, quote unquote, or the bad guys.
Not the Unsullied.
Sure, not the Unsullied, I guess. Again, they're just like Bran and that they don't eat anymore, and we don't see them moving from place to place.
Sansa's just like, listen, I think Thanos was right. There's too many people.
The MCU has gotten entirely too big. It's reached into fiction and the past. This is no good. Tyrion, we see in this meeting, just being a giant doof yet again. He has not had a win in a very long time. He brings up the Lannister army like an idiot to the people in this room who have almost certainly lost someone very close to them to a Lannister or another. This guy is dumb now.
Yeah, I'll attack. But what do you say when everyone needs to unite against this one common enemy? And it has to... no one else has seen the Army of the Dead. That seems to be a big thing, like... That changed people's mind. No one else has seen it, right?
Yeah, and characters do call him out as being foolish for even trusting Cersei to send this army in the first place. I feel like no one really thinks she's going to send her army until they actually see them marching. He has faith in the one person that he's not supposed to have faith in. It makes his character. It further makes him a stupid character.
I feel like he, I don't know, like his intentions were honest and fair because he knows what the threat is, so he feels that he's expressed himself enough to Cersei that he wants to believe in her, and then he's trying to express that to the people of Winterfell, and it's just not a good idea because, I mean, for all his life, he was able to say the Lannisters this and that, and people responded well to him, and now he's saying our army, which is vast, is coming to help you. And he expects the same kind of reaction, I guess, and it's obviously not there.
I have a very potentially controversial question next. Is anyone else getting sick and tired of Lyanna Mormont? She's really repeating herself.
She was only mildly cute the first time, and like the Lyanna hype was... She's a victim of her own hype, but then, yeah, you just can't lean on it. She also grew like 7 inches, so.
That's what I was going to say. Kids are a lot cuter at 6 than they are at 12. Like, nobody likes a fucking 12-year-old.
She's not as cute now. No one cares.
She's just being a whiny fucking teenager now.
Wow.
So, I did not expect that level of support. I'm glad to get it because I agree. They need to find a new wrinkle for her. I think they had no idea when they introduced this character in season 6. Albeit, you know, a very strong introduction, but they have not adjusted. They have not changed her character in any way, shape, or form. She's the same person.
Do we think that they brought her back because of Jorah, though? Because now she's in the same place as Jorah, like geographically, right? That's the first time he's been back.
Well, she's been in the inner circle as well for a long time now.
Right.
And it's not like they're going to share a scene. Let's be honest with ourselves.
You don't think so?
No, I do not.
We don't have time for that. I just don't feel like that's important enough to...
If it was going to happen, it would have been one of the many, like, one-on-one interactions.
They could have cut out one long Bran stare and then inserted a scene between Lyanna and...
I mean, I would have said add 3 more Bran stares and cut other stuff.
Next time we watch it together, can we play a drinking game where every time Bran stares...
Yeah. Drink until they cut away?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I can't handle that.
Sounds painful.
But we're not 23 anymore, Ashley. Let's not. We all need to lower our expectation on them moving quickly in these 6 episodes. I think if this episode taught us anything, it's that they're going to go back to the same tropes that they've been doing for the past 6 seasons because if they were really in a hurry, then this, I mean, they wasted an entire fucking episode doing the same catch-up bullshit that they do at the start of every season.
I don't disagree with that.
I think that's totally unfair, because if we don't spend any time with these characters, everyone would be bitching like, oh, John just sees Arya and everyone's okay and no one says anything to the fact that it's been 7 years or whatever the hell between it. Like,
yeah.
It's, like,
also, well, we were complaining it was going too fast, and now we're complaining it's going too slow. So, but I do feel the sense of urgency that there's only six, so come on, hurry up, let's get there. But
I think it's symptomatic of them just moving, artificially delaying these reunions that could have very well existed last season. Just, like, spread mm-hmm. out amongst several episodes instead of all crammed into the one. Because I totally get it. Like, yes, Arya and Jon need to share a scene together. 100%. Mm-hmm. But did it have to happen in this one? Like, I feel like they were separated in season 7 by an episode of arriving back at Winterfell, yeah. or him leaving Winterfell and then her arriving.
I think we just got to get past this last season and then just
focus. Oh my God, I've been saying this for a long time.
And just focus. Past
this last season.
Just, no, the past season, like the first half of the season, however you want to say it, and just take this for what it is for right now and say, okay, the first half of this was way too fast, and let's focus on these last six episodes. How good are they going to be?
Yeah, I just feel like if you've got six episodes to tie up all these loose ends, just spend an entire episode where nothing actually substantial happens feels like a waste to me, personally. But
I mean, and we're going to get into some more of this, but substantial stuff does happen.
Yeah.
Like, people are meeting. You don't just need, like, was Dany supposed to punch Sansa in the face? Was Sam supposed to, like, immediately run out of the hall and go, John, they roasted my dad. That's Sam's voice.
But I just doubt that they're going to be able, like, Dany and Sansa butting heads a little bit, fine. But they're, like, doing little pebbles of it instead of, like, big rocks in the river. Like, the way that they're playing it out, like, they exchanged, like, one curt comment to each other in this episode.
Yeah.
So that needs to escalate and escalate and escalate.
Or it needs to not even exist, because who gives a shit? They're all gonna die.
Yes, and this gets us to our, this gets me to my next point.
Eat at Arby's.
Hey, the Euros are back on sale at Arby's, leave them alone. That's a solid deal.
What?
So there's a nihilist Arby's Twitter account. When people say something really negative, like, oh, who gives a shit, they're all gonna die, just followed up with eat at Arby's.
That and John used to manage an Arby's and steal food.
Yeah.
Among other things. But anyways,
Riley mentions
that these arguments are petty and that everyone's gonna die. This brings us to our next point about the arguments between Jon and Sansa, both in public and in private. She's just set up to be wrong, which, based on her, again, entirely legit concerns about food and whatnot. I just wish the show would give her, like, a firmer ground to stand on. Like, she can't argue against Jon when all Jon has to say is the Night's King's coming. Just shut up and do what I say.
But do you think it's... I don't think it has anything to necessarily do with the planning and whatnot that she's upset about. Did you think it's...
Well, she's upset that that's now she's the queen, where Jon used to be the king. And the retort to that is, the Night's King's coming. We need to focus on that.
Right. I mean, she's mad because of the power structure issue, not because of... there's not going to be enough food to feed the army so we can survive.
Yeah, and, right? And, like, the latter is a more justifiable concern.
Right.
But then in private with John, she's talking about, I don't know if she's going to work out as queen. Like, but well, focus on your business. Like, focus on... She's always going to lose this argument.
Well, she's smart enough not to make that argument in public, obviously.
Yeah.
Right.
But, I mean, also, what would you give her to stand on? I mean, this is what the situation is. I mean, it is, you know, this dire situation of the Night King and the Army of the Dead coming. So, I mean, that really is the only argument that matters. And I guess the dynamics of the power are going to change once Sansa finds out her cousin is king, right?
So, in that case, maybe the show is silly to be putting any conflict at all between Sansa and anyone.
No, I don't think so. It's totally right.
No, I think why would there be? It's realistic, right? I mean, it's yeah, natural people are petty. What's going on.
Sansa being like, it's just, again, like, this is going to be a common complaint over the course of the season. Like, it's too late in the show for characters to be petty. They've gone through all this shit, and they know they're nearing the end, as the viewers do.
But they're worried about very human things and human emotions, which I'll draw a chart for you later.
Well.
For
just some not of these, very well.
I'll draw a chart for you and Bran later, and how people feel about family members.
I mean, put a lot of data points on it because I'm going to need them.
So, mom, neutral. Dad. Up neutral.
You're gonna need to show your work and give me some error bars. all right, fair enough. I didn't get a lot of support on that one. That's fine.
I thought you were gonna say I didn't get a lot of love from my family, but all right.
Also fine.
So John finally rides Rhaegal. I don't have a good eye for CGI. I guess this is all fine and dandy and whatever else, but I don't know. It didn't move me in any way, and I'm a person who has and does cry at various segments of How to Train Your Dragon, and the third one may very well be my favorite movie of the year so far. So maybe I've been spoiled by that. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think it was the worst part of the episode. I think it reminded me more closely to the little bastard kid riding the Luck Dragon in The NeverEnding Story than How to Train Your Dragon. It just looked bad. It was bad, and they should feel bad.
Yeah, I wish this scene happened later. Like, after, like, Danny knows or whatever John knows. It makes more sense, because here it just seems random and more like they try to make it fun.
No, they try to make it part of, like, a love story, I feel. Part of their love story. Well,
right, yeah, I guess the first ride, I mean, was fun, and then they lead into that.
Yeah, the equivalent is, like, them riding horses down a beach.
Right.
Said Winterfell is getting crowded. They needed to get somewhere.
They needed to get to a waterfall so they could bang while their dragon eyes them strangely. That was a long
hold. That was so uncomfortable.
It was a long that hold on that dragon's face.
You've obviously never had sex in front of a dog before. What if they would have flown over some whites and dumped them in the trash can, just like NeverEnding Story? Does that make this a better scene for you, Sean?
The only thing I remember about that movie is a rock man and memory balls. Maybe that's the sequel. I don't know.
I think memory balls is the sequel.
Okay, fair enough.
They do. Yeah. They do change.
Like a Back to the Future kind of ripoff thing. Whichever one came first, I don't know. So that's our NeverEnding Story segment. Really petered out at the end there.
I guess my question would be like, all right, they fly over. Varys and Tyrion, right? And they get a good look because Rhaegal, for whatever reason, does a sweet side move, so they make sure everybody sees Jon's on his back. Like, they know the history and the connection of, like, dragon riders and everything. So it just seems silly for them to look at it. Either that, or they're going to be clued in that Jon is no Stark, right?
Before That's what I said. That's what I said last night. I was like, does nobody else know that only Targaryens can ride?
It's not only Targaryens.
That's not a hard and fast rule.
There's exceptions, especially in, like, Dance with the Dragons, but there were, like, 40 Dragonlord families from Valyria, and Targaryens are just the only ones that are left, but that would either mean Jon's a Targaryen, or he's somehow this ancient descendant of these Dragonlord families that supposedly no longer exist. Like, I would think that's where Tyrion and Varys' minds jump to. And even Dany, because Dany knows the history of her house and her people from everything she's heard. And they just seem to pass it all by. And like, yeah, that's fine. You can ride.
Right. That's what I said. I was like, this doesn't make any sense that nobody seems to be alarmed that this guy can ride a dragon.
I don't know. I don't know if it's show lore. Like, I was trying to think if they ever actually mentioned Targaryen blood and dragons and whatnot.
I don't think
like, in the
have.
Book, obviously, it's stated plenty of times that they're the most connected and, you know, the way they bond with them. But maybe in the show, it's just not there, so nobody cares.
So once Dany returns from Drogon seeing a strange new side of her, so she heads down to the library to find Sam and thank him for saving Jorah, which leads into her telling him that she roasted his father and brother. Pretty solid scene, pretty good acting from Sam, who's something Bradley. John Bradley, maybe? I can't remember what the actor's
John
name
Bradley.
Is.
John Bradley.
Okay.
It's hard to forget an exotic name like that. I'm a little embarrassed for you.
Fair enough. he's like an underrated actor on the show, I think. And there's just a lot going on in the scene. Like, he's wrestling with how he can and can't react in this moment. Like, she's a little embarrassed by it. I don't know. I feel like the show judges her a little too harshly for that decision. I don't hold it against her. I've read some interviews from John Bradley, now that I know his name, about that scene in particular, and coming from the standpoint of, like, it was his family that she killed, he takes a very hard stance, using big words like psychotic and tyrannical and that kind of stuff. I don't think so. They're at war.
Even Tyrion thought that, though, that it was misplaced, you know, judgment.
Yeah, especially she didn't have to roast his brother. Like, the father,
she gave him choices.
Yeah,
you can take prisoners, though.
Yeah, fine. It would have been smart. It would have been wise, and just shows.
Didn't they suggest that, though, and she refused?
Yes, she did refuse that.
I mean, then again,
she doesn't take prisoners.
The payoff was getting all of their soldiers to fight for her, so that was a totally rational decision on her part. I don't hold it against her.
You don't think the intimidation of the dragons was enough? Without them toasting,
it wasn't enough for the Tarleys.
They just saw what the dragons could do. Yeah, but the Tarleys are noble people by name. Everyone else in front of them were just, you know, foot soldiers and recruits. No one cared. You know, they were going to follow whoever has the power or the money, and is going to feed them and keep them alive or whatever, right?
I think it would have been out of character for her to take them as prisoner or not do that.
I mean, yeah, it would be out of
character. She's never taken another prisoner. She's like the Inglorious Bastards. You either die or you come onto her side. She's never taken a prisoner before. Why would she start doing it now?
I don't remember any Nazis coming on their side. Didn't they just get something etched in their foreheads?
No, yeah, no, they were not able to take their uniform off. She's not carving huntsman symbols, Tarly symbols, into the various soldiers' heads as they then go on to fight for her.
But wouldn't the more rash decision have been, okay, roast old man Tarly, but keep Dickon? As everyone always does.
He made a choice. That's what he wanted.
Well, like, he's your prisoner. You make the choice for him. It's like dealing with children. They don't really make the choice on any of this shit. You make the choice for him.
We're talking about medieval warfare.
I'm talking about raising children. Medieval warfare. Someone back me up on this.
She also gains their lands, which is a fun little parcel that she can hand out to someone who is actually loyal. Like, I can really reward someone now with a valuable seat.
But isn't there, like, this very, even on the show, there's this long history of keeping someone captive to maintain loyalty, right? So you keep Dickon captive.
And there's also a tradition of burning houses to the ground and wiping out all of them.
And that's what led to the Mad King.
No, Tywin was fine. Like, there were no ill consequences.
It's why there are no more reigns, right?
Yeah. I mean, they value, you know, lives differently. I don't think she did it gleefully. She wasn't, you know, the Mad King cackling while she was doing it.
Somebody just make a loot train sound.
Son of a bitch.
This mic is hot.
it's picking up my thoughts now. Anyways, after this interaction, Sam storms off. Bran is, of course, waiting for just anyone to come out of a doorway. It just happens to be Sam in this instance. We'll see the deleted scenes when the Blu-rays get released. And Bran tells Sam to go tell Jon about his parentage, and he does so. And I think that's pretty much it for that. Like, he's stunned and he leaves.
Yeah, it's a lot to chew on.
Which is fine. Yeah, that's fine. And again, he's framing it as, like, as a political... I thought
that was probably Kit Harington's better moments of the series.
Go ahead. Just say that again, Sean.
I thought Kit Harington was stronger in that conversation than he ordinarily is.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's done some acting work over the 2 years that they're off. But, he's totally acceptable. He cracked wise. That was good.
Yeah. We know he's got some comedy chops. He was in 7 Days in Hell with Andy Samberg. A classic of modern.
We're really grasping at straws now to just give him props for anything.
Totally
well, SNL wisely had Rose Leslie ask him what they were going to do for money now that the show was over.
She's going to support him with whatever show she's on. I mean, that's a good question. Like, there's no residuals from Game of Thrones. It's not going to run in syndication.
I don't think they could live off that forever. I feel like
Jerry Seinfeld or Julia Louis-Dreyfus, they have checks coming in every month from Seinfeld playing on every affiliate at 11 o'clock at night.
True.
Poor Game of Thrones actors. When is their break going to come? So the last thing we see in Winterfell is Jaime arriving. And again, Bran is watching him as he gets there.
Well, that's what Bran is doing, waiting for an old friend.
It's just whoever shows up, Bran's there waiting.
I mean, Bran's not going to be angry on this one, right?
No, who gives a shit? Like, he would see all of this as a progression. Like, if he hadn't have been pushed out the window, he would have gone with Ned to King's Landing, and who knows what would have happened. So, this is all fine.
There's going to be, like, 1,000 moments in, you know, next week's episode where everybody's screaming at Jaime in their conference room, and Bran keeps on piping up, who gives a shit? And everybody just kind of stares at him weirder and weirder and weirder each time.
Yeah, like, he actually did something to Bran, and Bran's going to be the one to be like, if I'm fine with it, everybody else should be fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see an apology from Jaime, right? I mean, he's...
Probably.
He's down that path now.
How's that apology go? Listen, Bran, I know I pissed you out the window.
Bros can't think of the boner.
I had a boner.
If it makes you feel any better, it was only a halfie when I pushed you out the window.
Yeah, which I think you could see that. And just doing it out of love, but it was misguided love. So I'm really sorry.
What is love? What is this love you speak of?
Well, you know.
I know 10,000 years of history.
Well,
that word is foreign to me.
It's when a brother and a sister.
What are these relationships you speak of? All humans exist on a long continuum.
Can someone just execute me now?
So we leave Winterfell and we take a brief sojourn up to the last hearth, the Umber Castle. Tormund and Beric survived a 1,000-foot fall off of a crumbling ice wall, whatever, we don't see it. They run into Dolorous Edd and some remainders of the Night's Watch. And they're investigating signs of a battle, and they find little old Ned Umber strung up in the banquet hall. And he opens his eyes in the background. You can kind of see it. You kind of can't see it. I feel like that's a nice... I feel like Benny and Weiss saw Hereditary in the off season because there are very similar scenes in that movie. Little Ned makes a terrible sound and then gets stabbed with Beric Dondarrion's fire sword. This brings us to a listener question from friend of the podcast, Pierce B. Why don't more people light their swords on fire? That is a justifiable question.
And I have a very practical answer for Pierce B.
Yes, please, go on.
Such a practical answer that our power rankings this week
Wait-o.
Are practical are the five characters who have the most practical skills in modern society. So the rules here. The rules here are magic cannot be included. So sorry about your sorcerers, your Pyat Prees, all of those people. No magic, no Melisandre, no Thor Samir. You have to have shown your skill at some point during the series, and you must still be alive. So number five. I'm going with Qyburn. He was able to cure Jaime's wretched hand from completely falling apart and killing him with some boiled wine, and he, raised a Franken mountain. So modern technology and medicine, I think Qyburn would be able to get by.
Fair.
Number four, the Hound, and I managed to use the same quote on Facebook. Just the other day as well, but to quote Judge Smales from Caddyshack, the world needs ditch diggers too. Back in season six, when he was working for Ed Swearengen, he was dominating all of the manual labor.
Al Swearengen?
Oh, whatever. Al, Ed, did I say
How
Ed?
Dare you just throw that aside?
Number three, I'm going with, it's off the board here, Tyrion with pub trivia, but I figure if kids make millions of dollars playing video games, then having a dwarf that drinks and knows things hanging around with you, you could have a good time.
No red flags there at all.
Yeah. You have house cash all over the town like that.
2B, Since two's a doubler, a twofer. Yeah, I'm cheating. Gendry's rowing skills. The crew is a fake ass rich kid sport, as evidenced by, you know, our recent scandal with Lori Loughlin of Full House. But Gendry, I think, would be like, you know, when Pacey from Dawson's Creek was in the Skulls, he was like just this badass rowing kid that like the Harvard kids brought to win the meets. That's Gendry.
Is it just rowing or just straight speed and stamina? Because he can run too.
Well, you know, I only went with rowing here, but sure, he can run too. 2A, Gendry.
When he's not rowing for Harvard, he's beating Kenyans in marathons.
It was questionable stamina when he was with Melisandre, though.
He was minus some blood.
Now, 2A is where I get to answer P. Bauer's question. Blacksmithing. Also, not quite really useful in real life, but I've been watching a lot of Forged in Fire lately on Amazon. That's the show where nerdy dudes who are amateur and sometimes quote-unquote professional blacksmiths have 3 hours to make a sword or a knife or something. Well, apparently overheating your blade damages it quite easily, so you wouldn't want to burn your sword too often, otherwise it will break on you. So there's your answer, Pierce B. Number one on most useful character in Game of Thrones, obviously, I think we can all say it together, is Hot Pie.
Of course.
Yeah. We're a pro Hot Pie.
That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Right. Every single person in the fantasy game that we're running here at the MMC picked Hot Pie this week.
Really?
Every single person. I mean, I made you as well.
Oh, okay. That's
fine.
the Hot Pie category consisted of only Hot Pie.
Yeah.
Hot Pie is the Westeros participation trophy. So our last location for the...
Oh, actually, I want to go back. We go back to that real quick.
Yes.
So talking about that, the terrifying screaming child. I saw something today. The way it was set up may not have just been at random. It kind of looked like the Targaryen sigil.
So right, which is the pinwheel that we've seen a couple other times as well. So I know Phil asked if we think the Night King is a secret Targaryen as well.
No.
Oh my god, that's exhausting.
Yeah.
It is exhausting.
Not everyone can be a Targaryen. Like that, it's just...
I mean, I think the Night King's obviously someone ancient from the North.
Right.
Because, I mean, Targaryens weren't even around.
That is 100%. Yes, yeah. That's factually, like, the show has shown that it was just some dude that the Children of the Forest abducted and stabbed and turned him into a White Walker.
Sure. Right. We don't know.
And that was long before Targaryens arrived in Westeros.
Right. It seems like these people that are new to watching Game of Thrones, like in the past couple of years that all just caught up and are watching it now, are the ones that come out with the craziest theories about, you know, everyone's a Targaryen or I don't know. It gets so frustrating. It's just the show isn't set up that way. And then they come out with these crazy theories.
I feel like the culture journalism game about it too has also loosened the reins as far as what is and is not acceptable to write about Game of Thrones. Just because they know that anything with Game of Thrones in the title is going to get a high number of clicks.
Well, it's all clickbait at this point.
Do you really mean anything? Because we are in that group.
Oh, hell yeah.
We're also talking about First Reformed and 8th grade and Tully as well. Let's be fair. No one's listening. But it's out there. They can if they want.
So, to go back to the symbol, I saw it as more of a broken wheel than like the Targaryen symbol, which is something we've heard Dany say a few times. But I think in general, they're out to destroy man and the whole cycle of kings and queens.
I think we're giving all Benny and all Weiss a whole bunch of credit right now.
I don't know if it's them though. I think that might be the book describes different shapes and whatnot too, and we've seen this shape.
Do they do this in the books? Do they have these like creative potentials in the books? I don't know that they
like
do.
The first one describes something like the way the guy described how it was laid out, but it's not in detail. So it's probably not, but I don't know. They gotta be something, right? Like
no, they probably just like the pretty shape and then they went for it.
That could be.
Yeah,
I thought of heads on stakes, I would imagine.
I thought I had read a few years ago that the symbolism stuff was a show creation, and Benioff and Weiss, anytime they talk about those symbols, they more refer to history and spirals and everything being seen in all sorts of different civilizations, and they never refer back to the books when they're talking about that.
Yeah, like no matter what the origin, it looks cool. I'll 100% give them credit for it.
It did look cool.
So in King's Landing, the first we see of Cersei is that everybody knows that the walls come down. She's happy to hear it. And at the same time as this is happening, Euron is coming into the harbor with the Golden Company.
Oh, he's coming.
Oh, boy. Everything's coming up, Cersei, right now.
With Harry Strickland.
Hooray. I feel like maybe we talked about the Golden Company last season. I am a little wary, too, because it might be a future reveal. But again, I feel like that's giving way too much credit. So let's fucking go for it. The Golden Company is a lineage of exiled Targaryens, losers in a Targaryen civil war, who have long pledged to come back to Westeros and support a Targaryen ruler. That's not in the show. I think the show, they're just a badass.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to...
mercenary company that doesn't happen to have elephants.
So they're not going to do the thing like it's My Island from Braveheart, where they meet and then turn around and fight for him?
Maybe, but I doubt it. They've laid zero pipe.
Shane, I don't think John really understood what I was saying. Could you
say 100%
understand. Could you say that better than what I did?
Son of a bitch.
How's it going? What's give me...
Do it as my big island. And I just try to remember ridiculous line. And over the top as you possibly can.
I gotta do some.
It's nothing. Practice. It's just a series of syllables. As these two, as this group of
it's me, Lucky Charms. It's me island. I told you it's me island.
They may as well have said that.
That's really bad.
Yeah,
my mom's gonna be so upset when she doesn't listen to this.
So are big chunks of Braveheart. So
told you it's my island. And then Scottish is like, this is my island. Okay, the Scottish. I'm very sick.
It's a silly movie, and I feel like if we ever picked it, the cumulative GPA on that one would come way down.
I said, as sick as you are, that seems to be on par with most of your efforts.
Oh, thank you, Bobby. We're doing the rest of this just like this, John. We're all over the place. We can't keep it.
Cersei also can't keep any supporters or nobles or hangers-on or courtiers in the Painted Hall. It just seems very empty in King's Landing. I don't think it's a question of budget or extras. I do think it's purposeful, but it does make the world feel very small.
Yeah, I guess when you blow everyone up.
She can still like compel people to be there. Cersei, you know, we know a lot about Cersei, but I do kind of think she likes fear. Like the sight of fear in people, and the only people that are around her are these nameless Kingsguard people and the Mountain, who doesn't have too many expressions in the old toolbox.
Yeah, but sometimes you just want to be alone. Yeah. She emphasized.
I kind of think Cersei wanted to be alone more in this episode, because I don't understand this progression of her relationship with Euron, in which he achieves not his ultimate goal, but his proximate goal of getting with Cersei. I don't think so.
You're not buying that?
I'm not. He's not her type.
I don't think her type is someone who can get her something she wants.
What could Lancel get her?
more Lannister dick. Who doesn't want that?
Well, at the time, it was for Lancel to get information and whatever the hell else he was doing, right?
I mean, we didn't get confirmation about that relationship until after he had like pushed Robert to his death. So, like, she didn't have to continue it, she just chose to. I think she stayed with him because he was so weak and push aroundable.
Yeah, I feel like she has, and kind of Euron is fairly weak here as well, but I think she knows he'll stray.
He's weak in the way that he just says exactly what he's thinking at all points of time, which is anti-Cersei, which again, I just don't understand how she can stand being around this person.
I think she has this moment, though, where she like looks around and realizes there's nobody else there for her.
you know, she gets up and starts to walk away initially, but I think then she realizes, like, shit, this really is the only person that's, like, excited to be here and fight for me at this point. Everybody else is gone.
Do you think she's doing the math, though? Not that she's lonely, but, like, well, this guy is kind of crazy, and if I don't relent, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right on that, and I think that's the point. And there's, yeah, she's got no one, there's no one left. I think this, they kind of humanize her a little bit. They're not same mistake. They're not turning her into Ramsey Bolton.
So what if she has it wrong and it's the opposite? Like, Euron even told Yara that after, you know, like, she said you're on the losing side, and he's like, well, okay, I'll switch side, but first I'm going to fuck the queen. So maybe that's true. Like, maybe he's done now and she screwed it up. Right? Like, she read that completely wrong.
I guess that's possible. It doesn't seem like how the show is going to go. Like, we know there's going to be two big battle episodes in this season. It's hard to imagine that one is just Cersei locked up in the tower while whatever dragon remains burns her out.
It's also hard to imagine Euron not being pure evil as he has been created as.
I feel like they actually gave him a little depth here as well.
Ooh, I don't know. I mean, he's just a bro-y douche.
Yeah, I think you meant that he gave Cersei some depth.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you, Sean.
The show, Game of Thrones, is still Game of Thrones, even at this late date. You gotta have some brothel prostitutes in there, just sprinkled in. Maybe one of those was Martha. I don't know. We'll revisit that conversation a little later.
That was not an arousing foursome.
No one was really into it.
Yeah, they're just talking about Ed Sheeran's face being melted off.
Sure, a little bit of metadata that we gleaned from some of the writing around the show. The character that Ed Sheeran played in the seventh season was burned alive by a dragon or sliced in half by a Dothraki. But the point is, he's not coming back. I don't know.
No, he's still alive. He lost his eyelids.
What?
They're like,
oh, he was one of those guys?
Yeah, they were talking about, yeah, they're like, the ginger? Yeah. He lost his eyelids.
Was it that explicit?
Yeah.
Okay, I missed it.
Yeah. Some of us were watching the show last night instead of just bitching about it.
I was typing diligently.
To be fair, I would not have known this had I not read about it today on the internet.
Also, I did the same.
Yeah, I mean, I saw it. I didn't read the article. What did I just say about Game of Thrones clickbait? A character who was not named. It was a celebrity cameo. Where did he end up in the show?
Yeah, I'm clicking on
Meanwhile, we're never gonna see Hot Pie again. I want to know what happens to him. I don't give a fuck about
it's
Ed
a
Sheeran.
Fucking survivor.
I still want to know all about. I want the first season ended with a long calisthenic sequence from an old man. I want at least that much time of Hot Pie just going about his daily business.
I'll take a whole
his episode. Whole wake up routine, and maybe he comes downstairs and. A known character is in there. 10 minutes.
roll credits?
Something like that. Not necessarily roll credits. I don't want to get too greedy. Take it. But, all right. So Kyburn
interrupts. That's just the end of the whole show.
Gendry shirtless.
Kyburn interrupts Bronn's foursome to present him with Joffrey's crossbow to kill Tyrion and Jaime with. This is not a decision, I feel like. This is another... example of the show creating false drama. I still think it's crazy that Bronn didn't go with Jaime to the army where the dragons are. I guess there is the threat of the undead that he's worried about that kept him from going with him, but this just seems like no kind of decision. And I feel like we know that he's not going to do it if he's presented with the opportunity, which he almost certainly will be.
I mean, the guy's owed a castle and a lot of money.
Yeah, and as much as he's been friendly with Jaime and Tyrion, he has always maintained that he's going to go with whomever is paying him the best and will put him in a position not to die himself.
The times when he has lived up to that, it's been passive. For him to, like, not fighting for Tyrion against the Mountain in the Trial by Combat, for him to take an active role in enacting that kind of mercenariness... is not something I see the show making him do.
I don't know. I think I don't know where he's gonna go, which is it worked on me.
Maybe I think he will leave King's Landing and go to Hot Pie's Inn and just wait out the war.
This all sounds like a great plan. Like, all the smartest characters are going to be at Hot Pie's Inn at the end of the crossroads. Just hanging out, getting fat. The last scene to talk about is Theon rescuing Yara off of Euron's ship. She remembers that he abandoned her, however justifiably. Like, that was probably the right thing to do. She headbutts him as a freezer, but everything's fine. You know, they're even. Yara wants to wait in reserve for Dany in case things go bad at Winterfell, while Theon wants to head on up to Winterfell and fight for the Starks, and she lets him. And for me, this was like the emotional high point of the episode. Theon, like, these guys are, him and Yara both are like tertiary, if not quaternary characters by this point, but both actors are bringing it in every opportunity they're given. If not the only moment, I wouldn't go that far necessarily, but like, this was the moment that most worked for me in the premiere, which I still don't know the name of.
You didn't love when Jon and Dany were standing on that cliff making out in front of the dragons?
Nothing.
Just really pulled at the heartstrings.
You don't know the name of the premiere?
No.
It was called Winterfell.
Winterfell.
Okay.
That's it.
I don't know when they released that. Like, they kept it, at least, like, even Mad Men with its famously oblique episode previews. Dawn enters a room. Peggy has a conversation. They would at least tell you what the name of the episode was. Anything else on this late development?
Well, the name of it kind of brings me to where I was going. We didn't talk about the new opening credits, which I think is kind of important, at least, because they have some new things. First on the flyover, but they start going into places. But also the astrolabe, I think, is the most interesting. The last shot of it shows four dragons. One big one and three little ones flying. So that makes me curious. And like, years ago, I always said that winter wasn't just a season, and I think it's like a person or a thing. So I'm hoping that it's a big dragon still hiding in the ice somewhere.
That's long been a hobby horse of yours, is that a dragon is hiding under Winterfell or something.
Yeah, so I'm still hoping.
Speaking of hiding animals.
There's lots of people saying that there's stuff in the crypts.
Yeah. Maybe ghosts hang out in crypts. There's ghosts. You get a magical animal. You don't hang out with ghosts. You go on a fucking
maybe
dragon
ghost.
Ride?
Maybe ghost is a dragon.
Ghost, just put a fucking white dog in the background.
The fire background.
The fire background.
Just like Charlie Chaplin-esque size distortion tricks.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Something. Come on, guys. Get ghost in there.
Well, and did you see the other celebrity cameos in this episode?
Who are the celebrity cameos?
Mac and Guilfoyle were the two guys who got shot in the back, that hit by, shot with arrows on when Theon made his rescue.
Oh, I'm going to pay attention to my rewatch.
Who in Guilfoyle?
Yeah. Mac from Always Sunny and Guilfoyle from Silicon Valley. Yeah, so Mac's Instagram is a picture of himself with an arrow coming from the back and through his eye.
Nice.
What's his real name?
Rob McElhenney.
I have no idea how to spell that. The M-T-E-E. Irish guy from Braveheart might know. Oh. It's in that vein.
You want me to start? You want me to do my
Irish
guy?
No. It's just
more
of his Celtic nonsense.
Space McElhenney.
So a couple final categories to discuss. First, our Game of Thrones talk. Ned Umber, as we mentioned earlier, justified his brief existence by netting a good chunk of points. I feel like he'll score more points than Tyrion will over the course of the season if current trends hold up. So
you got
good 25
points for Drew.
Well done, well done. I feel like during our draft, we forgot the Beric Dondarrion loophole, because every time he's on screen, he's going to light his goddamn sword on fire
fucking
and get an automatic
magic.
50 points.
Boom!
That's crazy.
Who got him?
Shane.
Right after I picked Ghost.
So we let that go until the third round, and I'm that's probably going to be the difference over the course of the season.
I was drunk in an Uber, asking my Uber driver what his name was. Maybe that was a character, and
he might die next episode, but he's going to light his sword and then have a glorious death. So he's still going to get a shit ton of points.
Does he get points each time he lights it too?
Yeah.
No. Every time the Night King comes close, it goes out. He's like, oh, hang on, I'm right there, I'm light again.
I think they patched that hole up last year. Where that may very well have been the case. The random, much appreciated, randomly chosen episode MVP was Sansa. That's fine. Whatever. Just keep it random. if not Sansa, then Brienne was present. Give it to her. Well, she would have been high on my rankings.
Well, I don't think it was that random.
Like, it's defensible, but I hope at one point she just picks a character's name out of a hat and justifies it after the fact.
Yeah. And I had Sansa in my top four for the episode. Well, I think it's between Sansa, Arya, Theon, and Euron.
I say give it to Theon. Like, he probably accomplished the most.
He actually did do something.
Yeah.
Well,
who else? Who do you guys feel like is MVP of the episode? Any thoughts, concerns, questions on that before I make a choice here?
I mean, if you just go by what happened to someone, John became king and rode a dragon, but that's boring.
Yeah, his scene sucked. I thought Sansa won. I mean, I think despite John's complaints that they didn't give her anything to stand on in her arguments, I thought she was strong. I thought Sophie Turner performed well. And I think she has a lot of support in the North. I thought she had the best episode.
I thought Euron, because he actually slept with Cersei, which I don't think anybody thought was going to happen.
He still filled his arc.
He also did lose Yara, I think is the knock against him.
Hey, he doesn't know that yet.
It's just so easy. It's so easy to fuck with ships on this show. The Greyjoys are so intimidating, but people can just sneak up and take over their whole crews and steal their expensive prisoners.
It's always when the Greyjoys are fucking people.
That is true.
It really is.
Theme.
Why aren't they extinct yet?
Repeated statement that I hate the Greyjoys and I hope they all go away. Theon can stick around. He's done his work. And Yara, I think we all know that Yara's renunciation of rape and pillage isn't going to stick.
Yeah. What do we think about Arya? I mean, Arya, I feel like, won every conversation she had this episode, right?
Something we didn't mention is that she took pains to remind everyone what weapons she has. Not just Needle, but the Valyrian steel dagger, and now she's got an obsidian dagger
like
as well.
Spear. Looks like a spear.
Oh, was that? I wasn't paying that close of attention.
Yeah, it's going to be a little spear with a detachable head.
A little more of a ranged weapon now. You know, you can use it like the staff she was practicing with.
Like Scorpion from Mortal Kombat.
You don't think that Bran was the MVP of this episode?
He's the MVP of every episode.
He's the MVP of the show.
Twitter memes, for sure. All right, well, I think I'm going to go Theon. Theon's our episode MVP.
Yeah, that's right. He did good.
I have no idea who selected Theon in our fantasy group. I'll figure it out.
Haven't memorized all of the various lineups?
13 lineups. So I'm looking forward to my rewatch tomorrow and figuring out the rest of the points. But
Of our 13 lineups in your group there, Shane, how many are fans and how many are each other, are us?
I think it's probably 50-50, actually. Pretty close. So, I think maybe 7-6.
There are oil rags at stake.
Oil rags.
Be sure to play this game.
Future shirts you will wash cars with.
And or maybe you throw them in a pile and they lead to the destruction of your house and all of your possessions.
Yeah.
Classic oily rag business.
Yeah. See in the movies all the time.
You want to win this game.
Yes.
Final thoughts on Winterfell? The premiere of the 8th season and final season of Game of Thrones.
I'm going to give this one a B+.
Oh, that is generous, my friend.
That feels high.
Perfectly good episode. There's a lot going on. You're expecting too much out of a first episode of a season. Everyone had to get reoriented. Now we got all these introductions out of the way and we can get on to these longer episodes. I wish it was a little longer. I wish we didn't spend time on a dragon, but I think a B+ is about as well as this first episode could have been done.
I think in that vein, I don't know how Benny and Weiss sold this final season to HBO, but the standard is that like your 7th season is, you call it one season for contract reasons, and then you just chop it up and split it out over different years so you can sell double the media. When like Breaking Bad and The Sopranos did this, like they didn't have this little stutter step premiere, like this continued on with previous arcs at the same pace. And I feel like this episode is what you said, like a reset button. And it just kind of breaks up the momentum mm-hmm. when there's only 5 episodes left of Game of Thrones. This is like a C+ for me.
I was with Shane. I have B+. I think all of the conversations and the small moments were good. I think the dragon stuff was terrible. But yeah, I'm with Shane. B+.
If it was any other season, I'd probably say B plus because I really liked the episode. But the fact that we're so close to the end, it gets knocked down to a B. I liked it. I guess I just expected a little more out of it.
Ashley.
I'd go B minus, I think, just because I wanted more out of it. But I feel like if I gave it a rewatch, I might bump it up to a B.
And super fan Megan.
I'm going to give it a hard C.
Totally fine and defensible.
Thank you, Kissel.
Kissel loves being agreed with.
I just, you know, for me, I'm just like, I don't understand why we need to have all of this when we had the season, we had the episode last season where they all met up in King's Landing. It felt like just a northern version of that, and I don't need that at this point. There were some enjoyable reintroductions between people, but I don't feel like we learned anything new this episode. I feel like they could have done so much more with John finding out that he was a Targaryen. I felt like that was kind of half-assed at best. And yeah, I don't know. I also would have liked to, if we're going to reintroduce all the major players, then where the fuck was the Night King?
That makes sense to me, like holding him in reserve. I'm okay with it.
I think we learned that Cersei really wanted some elephants.
That is very important.
That's very important. That's true. Okay, I'm sorry. C. No, I'm still giving it a C. I can't give it a C+. I enjoyed it. I thought it was bad.
For Cersei, like, Cersei knows that Dany's got dragons. It's just, they're just bigger targets that are going to light up nicer. I don't understand what she thinks the elephants are going to do necessarily. Like, it's fun. I like that it's in there. And it led to, like, a very strong Simpsons reference. Where's my elephant? I know that's what I've been asking. So I'm glad that it's in there, but I don't really see the strategic potential in her mind. Much like I don't see the point of banging Euron, but, you know, here or there. Check us out on the internet at MuticaMovie.club. Like us on Facebook at Mutica Movie Club, where you can find the links to the various games that we're playing over the course of this brief season, as well as the conversation and the various questions that you can ask and we'll answer on the podcast. On the website, outside of Game of Thrones talk, we'll be posting our upcoming podcast about the last trio of movies we watched, which in this case were The Informant and Murder on the Orient Express, and The Third Man from the 40s. We're going to follow that up with a stronger trio of Burning and Inherent Vice and Unicorn Store. I don't know anything about the last one. We'll have to wait and see. Thank you for joining me tonight, everybody.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Bow down. When you come to our town, bow down. When we Westwood bound, bow down. Cause we ain't no haters like you. Bow down to some killers that's greater than you. Ooh.